Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
When the national media talks about rural populations in the United States, they usually mean white people.
The American white working class makes up the core of Donald Trump's support.
McDowell County was unambiguously Trump country.
Loyalty, unease in Trump's Midwest.
They all appear to be retaliating against industries affected by Trump country.
Working class whites.
But with all the focus on white rural voters who turned out for Donald Trump, another important group of constituents is usually ignored.
There are Black people living outside of cities, living mostly in the South, and living in red states, right? So the Black Belt overlaps with Trump country. And those are the folks that are really going to factor into elections across the South in these midterm elections.
That's Erin Haynes Wack, and she's the Associated Press national writer on race and ethnicity. And recently, she's been reporting from rural counties in Georgia in part of what's called the Black Belt.
The Black Belt is the what we know as the Deep South, which, you know, historically is where slavery thrived, where, you know, the wealth of the plantation system was created. And obviously, when slavery went away, these became some of the most impoverished areas in the country. But the Black Belt is also where, frankly, the battle for voting rights for African Americans was waged. And so, you know, you think about Fannie Lou Hamer or Ella Jo Baker, Fred Shuttlesworth, John Lewis. These people weren't from Baltimore or Cleveland or New York. You know, they were from the Deep South, and they expanded that franchise for all. And, you know, this is also the place where issues like voter suppression continue and persist today. And so that's one of the reasons why it's really important to focus on these folks and how they're going to factor into November.
And you mentioned voter suppression. Tell us a little bit about some of the other issues that are really top of mind for Black working class rural Americans.
Because a lot of these areas are poor, they struggle with economic development opportunities a lot more than urban areas. But they also have healthcare challenges, specifically. As we know, minorities often have healthcare disparities from diabetes to sickle cell to obesity, but they don't necessarily have the access to healthcare that you would have, say, in a city. You can have dozens and dozens of churches, for example, but no hospitals for miles and miles. And that's a real challenge for them, and something that has not been addressed, frankly, by the folks that get elected in those parts of the country a lot of times.
And in your piece, you went to Georgia to report this out. Why did you choose that state?
Well, Georgia was really, really important because in Georgia, there is obviously a very high-profile gubernatorial contest where possibly the first African-American woman could be elected governor in the country, and that's Stacey Abrams. And Stacey Abrams actually started her campaign in South Georgia, where a lot of these Black rural voters live. And the reason that that's important is because, you know, about a third of the rural folks in Georgia are people of color. And so unlike other contests, local contests, for example, that may be dilute the power of people of color, frankly, because of racial gerrymandering, you know, in a statewide contest, these are the voters that could really be key to those kinds of victories. And frankly, you know, what she has done going to a lot of these places that have been forgotten, you know, by Democrats in recent cycles could make the difference in that contest and others in the South where you have large populations of Black folks, especially in rural counties.
Erin, one thing that comes across in your piece is that the Black rural populations that you spoke to felt disaffected by politics. That seems to be shifting, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one thing that's important to think about for these folks is because they felt like they were electing people who were forgetting about them kind of in between election times. You know, they were voting for people who then did not come back and give them, like I said, the economic development that they were looking for or the health care that they need. And so they felt like, at least in these off presidential year elections, that their vote didn't count. You know, you've got now folks who look like them running in more of these places. In several of these counties that I went to, you have incumbents who've, you know, been in office for years, in some cases even white conservative lawmakers at the local level, representing majority Black counties. And I wondered, you know, how is that possible? Well, these people have gone unchallenged for so long, or people, you know, have not paid attention really to those local level elections. And so these people have stayed in office. But now that's starting to change as folks are starting to get more engaged in these local down ballot races and realizing that they can also make a difference.
Right. And what's interesting also is that I interviewed Sarah Smarsh, who's a journalist, a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking about how white progressive rural voters feel that their perspectives have been forgotten in the Trump country narrative, right?
Sure.
Did rural Black voters also feel like they were being left out of the media narrative, or was that just something that wasn't even a concern for them?
No, I think it definitely is a concern because, you know, I brought this up to them, you know, doing my reporting, and a lot of them nodded their heads in agreement. You know, they're not front of mind when you think about rural voters or even farmers. I mean, Black people, there's never been a time in this country when Black people have not been connected to the land. And so the idea that somehow we have been distanced from that narrative is really interesting to me. I mean, I'm from the South, and so obviously for me, that's not something that's foreign, but for a lot of folks that are in cities and maybe, you know, either don't have relatives or aren't getting back to that part of the country to see family or friends, it doesn't always occur to folks that, yes, there are Black people living in rural areas and quite a lot of them, frankly.
I'm curious if you think there could be the potential for coalitions to be formed between, say, more progressive white rural voters and rural Black voters who might be able to see some opportunities there for cross-pollination, if you will, of ideas. Or is it too early to tell right now?
Well, you know, I think it's entirely possible. And I say that because, again, when you're in a small place like that, you know, these are folks that are interacting so much. I mean, not to suggest there are still places like that where there is segregation and people are living in different parts of town, but the town is so much smaller than, say, a big city. And so these are folks that really do know each other. You know, I think of a recent campaign stop that Stacey Abrams had down in Plains, Georgia, which is the hometown of former President Jimmy Carter. And, you know, the idea that the two of them would be on the campaign trail together, President Carter has endorsed her, they're talking about rural health care, that's something that affects both those progressive white rural voters and Black rural voters. And so, you know, understanding that they do have shared interests, I think, does present an opportunity for just that kind of coalition that you talk about.
Erin Haynes-Wack is the Associated Press national writer on race and ethnicity. Erin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.